Hi, I'm Carlos Keener, founding partner of Beyond the Deal, BTD for short, and this is our podcast series titled Beyond the Deal, Making Sense of M&A, Divestments, and Alliances. At BTD, we help smart and savvy organizations design, plan, and manage M&A integrations, separations, and alliances for themselves, and through this, get as much long-term value from the deal as possible. Based on 20 years of experience across more than 150 international engagements, we've made the process as simple, discreet, and modular as possible to reflect our clients' needs today and in the future. This podcast series will help guide you through the challenges and unknowns of M&A, integrations, divestments, separations, and alliances, bringing expertise and best practice from our team and other expert practitioners in our network. Our aim for each podcast is to provide you with practical, helpful nuggets, ideas, new perspectives, and things to do to support your own upcoming deals. We hope you finish each podcast with something new you hadn't considered before that will help you, your team, and your business be more successful. If you like our podcasts, please share, comment, or subscribe to our channel. BTD, from pre-deal to post, we help you go beyond the deal.
Hello, this is Nick Palmer. I'm very glad to be joined today by Christelle Sanglier and Knut Sturmhoffel of Novartis to talk about the topic of alliance management and M&A. And in particular today, we want to focus on the idea of being a partner of choice, what that might mean, why it might be valuable, and how a M&A team like Christelle leads or an alliances team like Knut leads can find support, ideas, and new energy from the other side. We're going to talk in the context of Novartis. And for those of you who don't know Novartis well, in particular from outside of the pharmaceutical industry, Novartis plays in a number of very critical areas, oncology, cardiovascular, immunology, ophthalmology, neuroscience, and respiratory. And they have major franchises in each of these areas with major drugs and major research programs going on. Of particular relevance today, Novartis is also in the middle of the COVID response, having just getting its European manufacturing facilities involved in some of the mRNA vaccine manufacture. So Novartis is right in the mix of some of the most exciting and cutting-edge issues in the pharmaceutical industry today. And so it'll be really interesting to listen to how they do things in alliances, how they do things in M&A. So if I could start, let me start with Knut, who is the global head of alliance management for Novartis. Can you say a little bit about yourself, your role, and this whole idea of partner of choice?
Yeah. Hello, Nick. Thank you for the introduction. And let me perhaps just start with expanding a bit on what Novartis is, because I think you focused on oncology and pharma, so at one part of our business. But we have also this Sandoz division, as much as the NIBR research organization. Both of them are relevant also in the context of really partner of choice, because on one hand, you know, Sandoz, and with Sandoz Biopharma, we provide access to affordable medicine, you know, worldwide and also lower income countries. And with research, the important part is it's one of our arms for bringing innovation to patients, innovative medicines. But the second part is obviously external innovation, and that's where partner of choice plays the role. Is our portfolio really is about today 50-50 in terms of revenue from internal versus externally sourced innovation. And in order to maintain that or being competitive for the access to innovation, we need to be recognized as a company that is not just doing deals, but really advancing this innovation from our partners, from the industries that we are accessing, and bring it successfully to the market and the patients. So perhaps also, you know, since you mentioned partner of choice, to give you just a very brief kind of overview what we mean by it before then going into the alliance management function. You know, there are three, we focus on three key elements. As I said, the culture of bringing, seeing external innovation as important as internal innovation is a key element. And that means we have to collaborate, really. We have to look for the best of the parties that work together. And that is one of our key elements. We see collaboration internally as much as we see it externally. It's a mindset, and it's a mindset shift for our organization. And the third part is, you know, capabilities. We are seen as a company that is really scientifically strong and R&D strong, and with our capabilities very strong. And we really need to bring this to fruition when working with partners that we provide access to it. And a good example is the recent announced collaboration with, you know, BioNTech, Pfizer. There they reached out, do we have capabilities? Yes. And we bring them in to help in the overall fight of the COVID pandemic. So that's where the what we call the three C's of our partner of choice are. And where does alliance management now fit in there? You know, we're a central part of this whole initiative, because, you know, when you talk about a deal, that's only a small part of bringing innovation in there. It's the whole lifecycle management. And that's where alliance management, and not just the group of alliance management at Novartis that I'm leading, but really the alliance management community at Novartis comes in. So the team that I'm leading is a team of about 17 people that are in a federated system, sitting in the different divisions. They are reporting through a dotted line, through a matrix to me. But the important part is we're working together to drive a consistent approach to alliance management through sharing of best practices and working then with our partners in a hopefully aligned way that drives along these three C's of partner of choice. And I think that could help to to contrast it with how we do integrations in Christelle's team.
Thanks, Knut. That lays it out well, and it also gives the broader picture of Novartis. I appreciate that. Good. Christelle, what's the world of M&A and post-acquisition integration look like?
Thank you, Nick, and thank you for also inviting me today. I'm very honored and privileged to be having the opportunity to share some of our views on the very important topic of being a partner in choice as well when we think about external innovation, M&A, and alliance management. So I'm heading the post-merger integration of Novartis. The title is actually Head Global Integration and Separation. Separation as well, because we also do business divestiture. My team of 10 people, we are actually sitting in corporate finance, so not a federation like Knut's team. We are mainly focusing on being obviously the center of excellence to do M&A execution within the company. So we design the execution of integration and separation plans end to end. Our aspiration obviously is to deliver the M&A value potential, so the transaction potential, transform the aspiration into reality. As most of the expert knows in the area, once you have signed and closed your transaction, you know, you need to make sure that your future synergies or cash flows will come into reality out of the deal. And that's where I think one of the interesting part we do is helping our businesses in actually designing the operating model in order to deliver those plans while remaining compliant, because it is important to note that the pharma environment is very regulated. In terms of the main, I think, focus and differences, I would say with Knut's team and the alliance management team is obviously when you think about acquiring a company, a business, you have that very important element of tax, treasury, legal structure, because you are not only acquiring, you know, products and licenses, but you are also acquiring, in a sense, companies with legal entities and their structures in terms of, you know, assets and liabilities that needs to be then taken care of and integrated, which is also one of the reasons why we are having at Novartis the PMI under the corporate finance, so under the group CFO. The team that I'm having is also developing the frameworks when we think about transaction whereby we will be having services. So sometimes you're quite fully standalone companies, but not always. You can have, you know, carved out businesses or products from existing businesses, and there obviously you may end up having framework for transitional service agreements, distribution agreements, which we are also then supporting and giving the best practice for the organization. And there as well, I think the partner of choice is also still, I think, an important point to bring into the discussion on how well, you know, we manage the situation when there are services that needs to be provided or for which we rely in such context in order to always strike, you know, strong collaboration with our partners, because then the collaboration becomes a longer term collaboration. Once you acquire a company, you know, it's kind of like a short term honeymoon. But once you are relying on ongoing services, you end up having a much longer relationship with the partner, with the seller, or vice versa. And there we also think a lot about how we could be a good partner of choice.
Christelle, Knut talked about three C's of being a partner of choice. And from your seat, as you look at your team, your center of excellence, why does it matter from an integration point of view that Novartis be a partner of choice, that it hits those C's, the C of culture, of looking at external correctly, the collaboration view, as well as the capabilities? Why is that important to you in the M&A side of things?
It is, I would say, as important as it is for Knut, because at the end of the day, we are looking at it from also an internal perspective. We want to be a partner of choice with our business partners within the company. But also as well, when we think about it externally, it is, you know, one thing to come and have discussions, you know, with certain companies around the purchase price and the premium you will have and focusing on the financials. But, you know, most of the companies also fully appreciate the complexity of integrating and the complexity of, you know, merging culture and processes and systems to deliver the value. And there, I think, to be a partner of choice, we also want to demonstrate vis-a-vis our external partners that we do have an expertise and that we also do have, you know, that ability and learning agility to always strike in order to adapt how we are working, whether it is internally or externally, in order to support actually the success of those integration, because you need a lot of adaptability. Every transaction and every partner is different.
So each one of those fees then plays a role in extracting value and getting the maximum value out of an acquisition. Knut?
Yeah, I think for me, the interesting part is also, you know, the overlap between the integration and the alliance management. On one hand, you know, what Christelle pointed out, her remit is to get to the value that why we acquired an asset. At the end, that's also the remit for alliance management, to get the value of the out of the deal that why we entered into in the first place. The important part is that the two teams are probably nowadays more closer than we think, you know, because almost no acquisition comes on its own anymore. Most of the acquisitions come with other partnerships because the assets are not invented at the companies that we acquire. The best example for us is the recent medicines company acquisition that we did a year ago. And we have now a alliance with Alnylam around this. And that's why partner of choice also is important. You know, if you acquire and then have a messy alliance attached to it, that will reflect on you. That's why we need to also consider an integration as much as alliance management to be, you know, to approaching our partnerships from the right angle, from, you know, with the right mindset in place.
Let me ask a very stark question, okay? Knut, you laid out a federated model that you folks use that it seems to have served you well in alliance management. You know, Christelle, you've got much more of a center of excellence approach to post-merger integration. How often do your two teams interact with each other?
Good question. I think the nice part of this discussion is that we find more ways at which we should interact. I think, you know, Novartis is a large organization, is very still very much fragmented, but that's also partner of choice to drive internal collaboration. And I think for us, it's a good recognition that that there's more overlap than we may have appreciated before.
Christelle, any reflections on that?
Yes, I think to Knut's example, when you think about integration, you're working with cross-functional teams. Yep. Same in alliance management. But it is true that when you think about the setting up the governance for your integration, if you have assets that are coming through alliances, definitely, you know, alliance management team are and should be represented as a function of the integration to support the integration. And then there's really where we as, you know, leaders and teams can learn from each other in terms of practices on how we are interacting, collaborating internally, but also externally. What we need and where we think we see benefits of learning each other is, I would say, a topic that is new that we are now exploring, and we are very excited actually to be exploring it, because when you think about the activities that are ongoing in some areas, alliance management do also have the same cross-functional teams more or less than when we do a business integration. And I believe that in those area, and specifically when we think about more technical area in, you know, global drug development and the commercial area where, you know, I believe Knut's team have a lot of expertise, we could benefit from their expertise there when we think about the integration of businesses within our value chain.
And Christelle, you emphasized when you were talking a little bit about partner of choice about the fact that collaboration isn't just with external parties. Often it's in a complex organization like Novartis, it's driving those internal collaborations. And, you know, Knut and I have talked about that before. When I was at Accenture, I was the global head of the alliance management practice. And I was approached by a gentleman who's still a friend to this day. This was over 20 years ago, named Jeff Gilmore, who was one of our alliance managers who was managing a relationship with Microsoft at the time. He had no idea we had a consulting practice within Accenture that, and it was Anderson Consulting then, that did alliance management. And said, why aren't you helping us too? So it is interesting how some of these things come around. Let me put a question. I generally don't like simple questions, but I'm going to go with one of these for each of you. When you look at the other's organization, so Knut, you looking at Christelle's organization and vice versa, what one or two things would you really like to have or have access to that they're good at? You talked, Knut, in your three C's about capabilities. What capabilities do you see over in Christelle's world that would be great if your team had greater access to them? And Christelle, I'm going to turn the question around for you as well, looking at Knut's team.
It's an interesting question, and when we had you know, this discussion prior to this podcast, I realized I didn't appreciate how much of financial focus Christelle's team has. You know, from, as she described it, from day one, there's the focus on financial performance. So while I don't want to have that same metrics on alliances that often last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, I think having access to some of the tools on how you measure actually the success of alliance could sometimes help us in communicating with senior management. You know, again, we were struggling getting some of the softer skills across, the mindset across, but at the same time, we're a financially driven organization. And so being able to communicate along some of those matrices may be helpful. So that was one of the recognition for me. And you know, I think just to point it out, the recognition that we need to build both on our soft skills and or soft skills, the mindset and driving mindset, yep, that we are actually at the forefront of being able to shape the organization. That's another important recognition, and it's the area I think where we can join forces.
Christelle?
So yes, it's a very interesting question indeed. I think if I, you know, what I thought about and which I would value very much is obviously I think Knut's teams, they are having much in-depth external network. So they've been building the relationship with companies, also because the amount of alliances are much larger, if you want, compared to the amount of M&A's activities we're doing. That makes a lot of sense, but that is something where, you know, we would benefit certainly to understand how they've been maintaining that network and the ongoing communications with those companies over a long period of time. Because we usually, manage a communication in an M&A process, we probably have a maximum of 2 years ongoing relationship if we have services, right? But usually it's much shorter, and we kind of like focus the efforts on doing the deal. And after that, you know, we are already more focused on ourselves. So I think building those and continuing to maintain those relationships will be somewhere we could benefit from as well. As to the federation system that Knut has, obviously embeds the team within the business and within the business areas. So for us, being a centralized corporate function, it has the advantage, obviously, that we have a bit more room in thinking about arbitrage. We're thinking about, you know, prioritizing activities over others and bringing people to actually, have the high stake discussion across the different functions. But to some extent, we are then also further away from the business because we're not directly sitting with the business. And I believe that, you know, we could try to learn and better understand from Knut's team how that federation approach supports the success of the alliance management, and see whether we could benefit from such a model when we think about M&A integration.
Christelle, I think you raise a very interesting point, because I think that aspect of alliance management and the role that alliance management could play in exploring and exploiting those connections, these external connections, is still too much underutilized. So, you know, the role that alliance management, with their access to the internal of peer companies, could get us, you know, more access to new opportunities than we probably utilize. So there are discussions ongoing, but I think in terms of our mindset, it's the role of BD&L S&D. Alliance manager has no role to play there, you know, to say it a bit oversimplistic. But it's something we can, I think, further explore and exploit.
A couple of quick thoughts, folks, and I'm going to continue with that. I think this is a fascinating topic. Mike Leonetti, when he was head of alliance management at Boehringer Ingelheim US, started in 2004 an alliance day where they would bring in alliance partners to their grand rounds meetings to show off their alliance partners to the other business units to let them know what kind of capabilities they were accessing externally. Just a thought. But Christelle, you said something also that caught my mind. I have always found that when I interview a company's alliance partners, the things they complain about also prove to be internal problems for the same company. So if I interview alliance partners and they say, gee, these people are overly bureaucratic, I find out the company is that way towards its own internal people too. So your point about internal collaboration is particularly important there. Let me suggest something, and maybe this will be an interesting discussion for a few minutes. I believe you use the term honeymoon period. At BTD, I think we found that there's almost a negative honeymoon period. The honeymoon comes after the first year together. Very often in M&A, and you know this well, the focus is on the mechanical side of things. The focus is on the finance, the treasury, the legal. And sometimes that crowds out the innovative and the sort of value focused, because there's value in integrating all those functions and there's a requirement to integrate all those. So actually the honeymoon comes, the fun stuff comes later in M&A very often, if you're not careful. And if you're not careful to manage that process thoughtfully to begin to get that value, where Knut's team starts immediately towards the value because they are less tied up in some of those other issues. How do you balance that, and how might those teams help to start the honeymoon process actually earlier on M&A and to apply maybe a little more rigor to alliances to increase the value that's available?
And that's a very interesting question. It's also a very tough one, because I do believe that, you know, the nature of M&A drives a lot of the activities base that we're doing. I think what is important to note is obviously, you know, the honeymoon depends on each transaction. It depends on the characteristic of the transaction as well as its complexity. Yes, indeed, we have to quickly come in and focus on not so fun topics. I mean, it depends. If you're speaking to a finance person, they will be very pleased to handle those topics. But obviously, if you go more, you know, we're further away from the science when we start speaking about tax, treasury, you know, your consolidation of reporting. And that doesn't sound very sexy, but these are must-haves. For every company, it is important that we do them right. So I think while you may maybe perceive this as not being the super honeymoon, it is something that's actually very critical and supports to ensure that there is a honeymoon. If we hadn't those rights, we wouldn't even have a honeymoon to actually look forward to. So I think these are precursor steps in order to get really to that honeymoon. So they have to happen. Obviously, what you do is that in parallel, you know, to keep the engagement, you do those activities, but in parallel, you're still managing, you know, the employees' engagement, the engagement with the partners in terms of, you know, the communication on, the strategic aspirations. So I think you don't lose sight of these things. It's not like just one thing happens and then the one after. There are a lot of things that we do juggle in parallel in order to keep the momentum, because I think you know that momentum is very important. It fuels also the motivation as well of then both companies. So yes, not so sexy, but precursor, very important in order to get there. But in parallel, we never lose focus on the engagement and the people.
And so people can see that value coming up.
So Chriselle, you put the marriage contract before the honeymoon. No, but one important thought came to my mind is, you know, when you look at acquisition, where you consider perhaps what to do with the acquired company, to fully integrate it whether to keep it as a separate entity. I think there, when you have a collaboration and an alliance, there we may have the advantage that we think of this while we're negotiating. So if you set up the contract, you will discuss in length what the individual parties will contribute to it. And that allows us then to engage very quickly in that honeymoon, as you said, because then you know already what are the conditions under which we want to operate. Then later on, you get more into the operational frictions, and is that really what we signed up for? I think in your case, in the M&A case, I feel very often we may not spend enough time to really assess how the two entities will relate to each other going forward. And that may then happen later, you know, once you know each other better.
That's right. And I think, Knut, to what you're saying, it's totally fair. Yes, we do always have a thinking about how we would want to do the integration. We don't share those discussions and we don't speak too much about it because also I think the dynamic of the negotiations, you know, when you start the process with due diligence and then coming to signing off an agreement, you know, is still today, I think, a process that doesn't allow enough time to look into it. However, what we are now trying to build on is really also with the experience, and there we can share learnings from the alliance management, is between signing and closing, that's usually where, you know, companies start really putting all their heads into getting their integration plans together. So what we are doing is now, you know, we're trying to do an early assessment of the integration strategy, building on what you said, Knut, which is, you know, assessing really where are, you know, the strengths of each, because ultimately you want to combine, you know, the key strengths of both. That's how you bring value together. And I think we can really learn from your team, Knut, as we start thinking about how we can better establish our approach into that early integration strategy thinking, and then to further obviously develop it over time. As always, you know, we are in the M&A fields always limited in terms of exchange of information, because most of the time we have antitrust situation, right, where we just cannot have open communication. So we don't always have full visibility exactly on a target company in terms of their capabilities. We obviously know the key ones, the ones that are in focus and the core, but that's not enough. You need to really start looking at the subsets, because it's a key, it's a pyramid, right? If you want the top to be working, all the foundations below have to be working as well. But we don't always have access to that information, so we usually start refining the plans once we have full access. So after, you know, we do the closing and start really getting to know each other, which may be seen as a long time at times.
Well, Christelle, interestingly, when you introduced yourself, you talked about your team being responsible for going from aspiration to reality. And I thought that was, and in this context, you know, Knut is talking about, you know, the ability to negotiate up front some of the way the details are going to happen. What was very interesting, I mean, I like that picture you created. When we come back to Knut's three C's model, two of the three C's are not mechanical. You know, the capabilities, you could argue, is sort of an engineering technical kind of a thing. What can we do? We're very good at manufacturing this, or we're very good at doing this kind of trial management. But the other two, the culture and the collaboration, are about organizations and people and processes and all sorts of other stuff. They're less of an engineering problem. And what you're describing, Christelle, is once you can see more and have access to more, you can begin to get into those details. So it's kind of interesting, Knut. And Knut, I want to come to you on the fact that two out of your three are not, let's call them engineering disciplines. But people like to throw the term around, and it's always irritated me somewhat, the term around soft things. It's more than soft things, though, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and I use the word soft skills, but correct. It's really much more. It's mindset and as culture said, culture is something that is more than just behavior. It's also how you think about it. And you know, culture for us is an important one because Novartis itself is on a culture journey for the last 4 or 5 years, and really, you know, turns around how we approach our business overall. And therefore, that partner of choice mindset and change in mindset is integrated in that culture. So, you know, you won't describe it only as soft skills. It's much more. And collaboration as well. You have to understand what it means. You have to feel about it as well, because it's not just something that comes easy. You know, people need to be really trained in what this change in behavior also means. Because where we are coming from is we see the strengths in ourselves. You know, we are proud to be Novartis, and Novartis, you know, every large company knows the so-called NIH syndrome. That's what we were trained 20 years ago, and that shift in mindset that we can't do it all ourselves, that we are much stronger together, is something that people need to learn and also see the positive sides of it. You know, they have to experience it.
Yeah. Christelle, obviously your team has some of these skills. You know, Knut's team is maybe deploys them differently and hires them differently. How does that look inside of your group, and you know, how would you look to alliance management to enhance your team's effectiveness?
Yeah, so the team does obviously have this. I think where we can benefit from is, you know, thinking again about the context, right? When we come in, we are looking at integrating a business that we acquired. So obviously, when we think about that, you know, there's a strong decision power that comes within the company, right? So we have that very strong decision power. And I think where it becomes important is to, as to what Knut said, is to balance that decision power with the business savvy approach of thinking, what am I also going to learn from the targeted company? Yes, I am Novartis. Yes, I have the decision power because I have acquired the target. But I need to generate value, and while I have to generate value, I need to also be able to reinventing myself. And there comes also the opportunity to be able to look and understand and have that mindset of looking at the company we acquired with the mindset of curiosity. And while we're going with the culture, we're also having a culture change. We are also having a culture of curiosity, which is also to be able to in a way, be curious and understanding how others have been actually operating, what has been their success, and can we learn from that as well? So not only make them actually fit into us and into our model, but actually have that dynamic of rethinking and learning from them, not just from ourselves. And I think that's where I think, you know, Knut's team is facing this much more often than we are. And we can also a bit learn and also maybe work together from a networking point of view, also to bring that mindset really at the forefront of what we're doing and thinking about integration, because it's throughout the value chain. So I think we need to have, you know, all, you know, the business leads, but functions also capture that. It's almost like a mindset, a DNA change in thinking about these approach. Because when you integrate, you have the decision power. I think it is comfortable to always go with your own processes and systems because they have proven to be working for you over time. But thinking about innovation and external innovation, it is not only in the science. You also have the innovation elsewhere. You can have innovation in how you're looking at procurement, and that drives as well value. You can have innovation in how you actually manage certain communications that can drive value. Some, you know, more nimble companies have different ways of working. Obviously, sometimes it is applicable to large companies like Novartis, sometimes it's not, but I think we need to keep that curiosity and that thinking on how do we play with the strengths of each. And that starts with making sure we are open to looking at the strengths of the targeted companies outside the science. Obviously, we always appreciate the science, but also outside it.
But I like your use of the term curiosity.
I just want to say, I think Christelle rounded it up very nicely. And for me, thinking through whether we should add the fourth C to our three Cs, because curiosity is the one that really, you know, is at the center of collaboration. You need to be open-minded and learn and curious enough to learn. And so I think that rounds it up quite nicely, where both sides can benefit from what we bring in through our external partner network.
Well, it's interesting as we get towards the close of our time together this morning or this afternoon, your time. Curiosity is a great term. I mean, we started from the idea, and clearly the two of you are very curious just in the engagements we've had together. The idea of partner of choice being something that creates value for Novartis, something that creates value for Novartis' partners, and perhaps as importantly, something that creates value for patients and for people who rely on companies like Novartis to do what they do really well. Maybe if we could close with just a sort of a brief thought from each one of you. Christelle, I will go ladies first this time. If the goal is for Novartis to become a more attractive partner, a real partner of choice, even more than it may be today, what one thing do you see in the short term that M&A could learn or take from alliances that might help to create that presence, that presence as a partner of choice for Novartis?
I think what I would take from alliance management is very much their expertise in really in the short term in identifying quickly, you know, the key strengths of each. Because we will continue. It is on our strategic agenda to do, bolt-on acquisition. So we will face, situation where we are acquiring as well, you know, some innovative platforms or bringing more innovation into the existing platforms. And I think there we will quickly learn from Knut's teams, and we should and we want, we have that appetite as well, to assess early on as part of what I would call the integration strategy, which we would think about it before we sign a transaction. You know, really, when you look at the value of the transaction, you start already thinking about that integration strategy to actually build on Knut's team's expertise already there up front.
Nice. Knut, the same question sort of turned around, which is, you know, in the short term, You clearly had some visions of the value of interacting with Christelle and, you know, getting your teams to collaborate, to take your number two a little more closely. What do you see as the short-term wins for Novartis becoming a partner, more of a partner of choice?
So, sorry, I see two questions now in there. You know, one is when I understood how we could benefit from some of the approaches from Christelle's team. The other one is how to become more of a partner of choice. I think the two separate answers to that. The first one, I think, we may be able to learn is more at looking at the more structured approach that happens in the integration team, because clearly the timelines are shorter. There's a clear, you know, integration plan. It's not that in alliance there's not a plan. Normally there's a development plan, but it is perhaps less comprehensive. And same with the integration plan that goes along the broad network within Novartis, because a lot of functions are touched by such integration. So that is certainly something that may help us in bringing, you know, starting alliances off on a more structured approach. Back to the honeymoon discussion, you know, when you're in a honeymoon, you may not want too much of a structure, but sometimes the structure may help. So the reflection on what we have to do to become a better partner of choice or more partner of choice is ultimately, you know, with a hope that we will attract more of partners that makes us more standing out in bringing in external innovation that our peers, our potential partners see actually the benefit that we can advance their technology, that we can help them, support them jointly and in the collaboration to bring the innovation forward and ultimately, you know, benefit with that, number one, the patients, but also their products, their innovation. And I think that's why I also reached out to Christelle early on, is that we all need to drive this change in our culture and mindset much broader through the organization. You know, some people still think a partner of choice is a BD&L initiative. Yeah, that's where it started because we are the driver for external innovation. But if we don't get the support from the large organization, what we call the One Novartis, including also senior management, as you mentioned before, then we will not be successful. And that's what we are, you know, still on a journey to achieve.
Well, that's great. And thank you both very much. We've run over our time contract, and I have no regrets whatsoever, because I think we've covered an awful lot of ground. And it's interesting to see the perspective and to see how the Novartis model, you know, different as it looks on both sides, can be very complementary. And some of the interaction between you, it's been a privilege, and I really appreciate your openness to discuss this and being involved in it.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity also.
Yeah. Yes, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
It was indeed, and hopefully we will have many more discussions going forward as some of this comes out.
If you like our podcasts, please share, comment, or subscribe to our channel. BTD, from pre-deal to post, we help you go beyond the deal.